paid into Medicare for decades. Don't spend retirement limping. The Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. It's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000.
I'm Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to the podcast. Elton Jim Toronto with you here at WGNplus.com for yet another episode of Captain Podtastic. And interestingly enough, I'm really happy. The last episode we had, I believe it was six. Can't believe it's already six. Wow. Wow. Six podcasts? You should really be proud of that, Jim. Had some really good response. Interviewed the longtime guitarist for Elton John, Davy Johnstone, who I've known for a few years. And we had a really nice interview. And I was able to share, happy to be able to share that, not only with the general public, to give you a little background on what it's like to work with someone like Elton John, but certainly I've gotten a lot of response from a lot of Elton John fans. I put that out on Facebook and in different kind of chat groups, and people have been listening to it. And Davey gave a really honest and open and revealing interview for the whole hour, and it was really fun. And and I'm glad I was able to share that with folks. And that's what's great about the podcast world, because Davy Johnstone, first of all, has a very thick Scottish accent, and secondly, he's a musician. And so he drops the F-bomb quite a bit, and he did that throughout the interview, and which was fine, but it would have been very difficult to air that. We would have to do some major surgical editing to take out a lot of the F-bombs that that Davy used throughout the interview. So that's what's so great about the podcast, is that you're hearing it unaltered, unscrubbed, unedited. And I think that also added to the charm, because he wasn't swearing for effect. He wasn't swearing to be mean. That's just how he talks. And it was cool to hear him in that. In fact, like I said, I've been able to strike up somewhat of a friendship with him over the last 20 some years or so. And in fact, about now it's been 20 years ago, he put out a album, an instrumental album, with a well-known guitarist who was also playing in Elton John's band for a while, named John Jorgensen. And it was an album called Crop Circles, and I was lucky enough to write the liner notes for that album. And that was always kind of a secret thrill to be able to write the liner notes. You always open up the albums, and there would be these liner notes of somebody talking about the album, the artist, and it was always pretty cool. And being a writer myself, that was always kind of a goal, so I always thank Davey and John for that opportunity. I still have that CD at home. I've got it framed with my liner notes, and they signed it. And every so often I'll take a read of that and go, oh, not too bad. But anyway, enough of that stuff. Let's talk about this week, this podcast. And, you know, I don't know if it's just me, but does this stuff just happen to me? Or does it happen to everybody, and I just have the outlet to talk about it? But I don't mean to always talk about these goofy things that happen to me and play my Curb Your Enthusiasm theme underneath it, but it seems like every week, I'm really not that much of an idiot, but it seems like I do a lot of goofy things. So maybe I have to come to the realization of this. So listen to this story as the misadventures of Elton Jim continue once again. So I've been auditioning, I've been rehearsing for this play that I'm going to be in fact, in a week from today, it opens. And so for the last 3 or 4 weeks, you've been rehearsing, and they've been long rehearsals. They've been four to five hour rehearsals, and kind of far from my house, like an hour away. So it's really been a big time commitment. And I just about three, when we just started about a week before the rehearsal started in the beginning of June, I got a new car. And it was a completely different car than I had before in terms of the shape and the model, completely different. I used to have, even though I had bought a new car over the last couple of years, I bought the same kind of car. I really liked this one type of car, but they stopped making it, unfortunately, which really bummed the heck out of me. So I got this new one, and like I said, it's a different shape, same maker, but different shape, different everything. And so, you know, you get a new car, and there's just differences about it when you get in. The dashboard is different, and the seats are different, and everything is different. So I go to rehearsal, and I usually park in the same spot every day, right near the door. And when I get out of the rehearsal space, it's dark. There's not a lot of lights there, and my car is black. And I'm not really used, as I said before, used to seeing it. I'm still getting used to it at that time. So I get out of rehearsal. It's dark. I see the car, and I have my little key fob that with the automatic door opener, my little fob with the little thing. So I hit that, and I'm also making a phone call. I've got my illustrious flip phone. If you've been listening to the podcast with any regularity, you know that I don't have an iPhone. I have a flip phone, and it works just fine for me. In fact, there's too much on my flip phone for me. It's an information overload, my flip phone. So anyway, I call a friend of mine, and I'm kind of distracted because I'm waiting for him to pick up. The phone is ringing. I'm carrying a bag with me, so I'm kind of, you know, I've got to open the door. So there's a lot of things going on. And I know how, you know, in the 2000s, we all talk about how great we multitask, but I don't think we really do. We do a lot of things at one time, but do we do them all well at the same time? That's the definition of multitask. I don't know how well we do all these things at the same time. We may try to do them all well at the same time, but I'm not sure if we do. And this is an example. So I'm carrying this bag that's kind of bulky. I'm waiting for my friend to pick up on the phone, and I'm getting in my car. So I hit the fob. I open the door. I get in the car, and when I get in the car, the steering wheel is very close to my thighs, to my legs. And I'm like, well, what happened? I mean, I'm like, okay, well, I just got the car a week ago. Maybe I'm not used to where the steering wheel is. Maybe I have to lift it up. Okay, fine. Meanwhile, you know, the phone is still ringing. Now my friend picks up, and I close the door. And as I'm talking to my friend, I'm looking at the dashboard. And the dashboard doesn't look familiar. But once again, it's a new car. So I'm like, well, as I'm talking to him, I'm still more distracted because I'm talking on the phone. I'm not really thinking about my surroundings. But as I'm talking, it is kind of registering now that this dashboard looks strange. Even the new, you know, even though it's a new car, it doesn't really look like it should. But I'm not focusing on that. And I'm continuing to talk to my friend, and thank God I'm not trying to start the car yet. Because then all of a sudden, as I'm in the car now for maybe 5 minutes, I'm getting a little more acclimated to my surroundings. More of my senses start to take over, and suddenly in my nose, I'm smelling smoke, like a smoky smell. And I don't smoke. And in fact, my car at that point, and still even today, about a month or so later, still has the new car smell. But certainly, when this happened, it was very strong. It was a week old. The new car smell was bursting. You just want to bottle that. Love that new car smell. But anyway, so now I'm talking to my friend, and I'm realizing that my knees are against the steering wheel. The dashboard looks odd, and there's a smoky smell in this car. And as I'm talking to my friend, it certainly hits me. I'm in the wrong car. This is not my car. I'm in someone else's car. And so clearly this person left their door open. And when I hit my fob and I went to open the door opened and I went into the car. And it's a similar type of car. It was a black car. It wasn't the same make, but it was enough that, once again, being distracted with my phone, I just sit down. Well, now I'm in a stranger's car. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I got to get out of here. What if the owner comes out of the building and he sees a strange person in his car because he probably is not as distracted as I was. And he realizes which car is his, unlike what I did. And he'd be like, what the heck's going on? Someone's sitting in my car. So now I'm like, oh, my gosh. So I jump out of the car and I close the door. And I'm like, oh, my God, what the heck did I just do? And then I look, and sure enough, it's not my car is in the space next to it. And I'm like, oh, my God, I just walked into someone's car and was there for 5 minutes, not for 2 seconds. So thank God the guy didn't come out, and I didn't lock the door, which is actually a good thing when I'm thinking about it now, because he didn't have it locked. What if I had locked the door and he didn't have his key? I could have locked him out, and he could have said, well, wait a minute, how did my door get locked? I know I don't lock my door, but I didn't do that. So as I'm kind of shaking, because even though I didn't do anything wrong on purpose, it was still an odd situation. And as I was thinking about it now, I'm saying to myself, you know, we're talking about all this multitasking, and everybody's always doing three things at one time, and oh, I can do this and that. But here's a perfect example of how distracting that phone can be. Because clearly, even though I had my bag, so what? That's hanging off my shoulder. And I hit the fob for the lock. But being on that phone, with that phone ringing, dialing, you know, hitting contacts, whatever, and the dial, you know, the ringing and waiting for the person to talk and then talking, it is clearly more of a distraction than I think we realize. In fact, you know, I've been driving quite a bit. As I said, this play in the rehearsal is like an hour from my house. So I've been driving in a lot of traffic lately. And I can just see that people are doing millions of things aside from driving. And I know that's nothing new, but I think, you know, I don't know about you, but have you noticed that it just seems like there's a lot of traffic more? Just more traffic. But I don't really, after this realization of how distracted I was by talking on my phone that I didn't even realize I was in the wrong car, and I didn't drive, or thank God I didn't, you know, I couldn't drive, but, you know, thank God I didn't get caught. But anyway, I'm trying to think, I don't know if there are that many more cars on the road. Or is it just that people, I've noticed at least, people are driving slower, and not to say that that's good because they're not speeding. I'm talking about they're driving below the speed limit. If you've been on the highway lately, do you notice sometimes that there's all this bumper-to-bumper traffic, and then suddenly you get to a point, and it's wide open, and there's like a half a mile of the car next to you. There's like a half mile of open road. And you're like, what are you doing? Why aren't you filling that space? You're slowing. And I think that people are either, whether it's hands-free or not, I don't care. It does take some attention, obviously, to have a conversation, at least a conversation that's going to have some logic to it. And let's face it, folks. I mean, driving a car is not. We all drive a car, and it comes to a point where sometimes, and I'm sure this has happened to you, you don't even remember making a turn. Sometimes we've taken driving for granted so much, especially if you take the same route every day, that sometimes you realize, wow, how did I get five blocks? How did I get to this point already? I don't even remember the stoplights or the turns I made. You're so much in autopilot, but. When I'm seeing people now, as I've been driving a lot over the last month or so, I'm just seeing there's a lot of traffic, but not a lot of cars. And I really think that we need to, I mean, hey, look, I know the cell phone and all that stuff is never going away. It's here. The genie's out of the bottle, but, and even hands-free, there's driving and talking and doing other stuff. And hey, believe me, I'm just as guilty as anyone else. But I do try to do one thing at a time. Everybody keeps bragging these days about how great they multitask. But then I see people driving and talking, and they're not driving good. And I'd love to hear their horrible conversation, because if they can't drive, then I'm sure their conversation is gobbledygook as well. But what I'm wondering is there a way that is there a lane people could go? I mean, is there something like, if you know that you're going to be multitasking, do we create the multitask lane? I know we're all worrying about, carpooling and all that, but when I see these long stretches of a mile or a half mile on the highway between cars and it's clear, here's the other thing that drives me nuts. Tell me if you haven't experienced this. So you're going to make a left turn under the highway, or you're at a light, but it's at that left turn at the highway. And, you know, it's all, there's, you know, depending on the highway, and I get on the Eisenhower, which is a bear. And you're in that left turn lane, which many times is almost, you know, a half mile long. So, you know, once that turn arrow happens, you want those cars to start moving so you could get on this highway instead of waiting in this line. And I don't know about you, but the next time you're driving, notice the time it takes for the drivers who are at the front of the line, whether it's for that left-hand turn or even at a regular stoplight, that first person, when the light turns green, I guarantee you, the majority of the time that we're driving now, there is a good 2, 3, 4, maybe even 5 second wait before that first car goes forward and starts the traffic again. Now you say, Jim, what's the big deal about 5 seconds? Well, it's a big deal about 5 seconds if you keep adding up those 5 seconds continually. And I think it's obvious if you look behind you too, you'll see that people's heads are down at every stoplight. I was thinking about this whole rap I'm doing right now yesterday as I was driving. And as I'm thinking about this, I look behind me and the green light goes and I'm first in line and the green light changes and I move forward and the person behind me is not moving. And I could see her head down. So now I'm driving and I'm going through the intersection and I'm looking in my rearview mirror to see, when is she going to start driving? I was at least a half a mile away before I saw her head bob up like, oh. And it's like, yeah. So don't tell me that you're multitasking, because you're not. You're unitaxing. When you should be driving your car. So, you know, I don't even know how much traffic there is these days, but I don't know. Do we need instead of a carpooling lane, do we need a cell phone lane? Do we need a multitasking lane? Because I'll tell you, the traffic around here, especially in the Chicago, is bad anyway. There are a lot of cars and our roads are not in great shape. And there's a lot of two-lane highways or three-lane highways that should be four or five, or as I've always said, we should build double-decker highways. If we can't build out wide, let's build on top. Do you remember several years ago there was a major earthquake in San Francisco? And they were showing the devastation of what happened. This was back in the early 90s or late 80s. In fact, I remember watching a World Series game, and it happened during a World Series game. I think Al Michaels was on. He's like, "Whoa, wait a minute, we're having an earthquake here." But when, after they showed the effects of the earthquake, I was shocked to see that in San Francisco, which we all know California is right near the San Andreas Fault, in San Francisco they built double-decker highways where they know that there's a chance for earthquakes, but they built them anyway because of the traffic problem. Here we are in Illinois, and I know we've got this little fault line that every so often rumbles, and there's, you know, a 2.0, but my point is that's not gonna shake down a highway. Why aren't we building a double-decker highway? The Kennedy going into Chicago needs more lanes. The Eisenhower going into Chicago and out needs more lanes. And it's landlocked on each side. These things were built 60 or 50 years ago. There's houses. There's neighborhoods. People don't want to lose all their, you know, their neighborhoods. I understand that. So we have to go up. Remember, Chicago's the world of the skyscraper. It's not about going out. The skyscraper found more real estate going up into the air. Why can't we build our highways higher, not wider? I got to mention something quickly about my phone, too. So a few podcasts ago, I was telling you about my flip phone and how it's an information overload for me. I've got friends who are they're literally upset at me because I have not gotten an iPhone. One even threatened to kidnap me while we were in the car and drive me to a Best Buy to buy me one. That's how upset he was. But I'm like, hey, I love my flip phone. And I'm like, as I said many times, it's actually, there's a cool vibe to it. And I read a story recently that Motorola might be bringing back its Razr phone, which is a flip phone. So I'm fine with that. But here's the best part. So I'm telling you, we get this new car. And so, you know, what I love about getting a new car these days, you know, before when you bought a car and you went to the place, you went to the dealer, you got the spiel. And when you went, the first thing the salesman did was lift up the hood. And he said, look at that engine. Look at that carburetor. Look at those pistons. Look at that whatever. I don't know. Believe me, I don't know. I know nothing about the inside of a car. When he used to do that and showed me that, he might as well, it could have been empty. I wouldn't have known the difference. He could have been naming off parts of the car that he made up at that moment. Look at that Johnson rod over there. I wouldn't have known. But at least the emphasis of the car was on how it works. I remember this thing on the commercials. They always talk about rack and pinion steering. I don't know what rack and pinion steering is. I don't know if it was good or not, but I know that they always talked about rack and pinion steering. And then all of a sudden, now we have the anti-lock brakes, and there's all these things. So at least when you bought a car, certainly you bought it for its look and its shape, but there was an emphasis on the production of the car and how it ran, you know, gas mileage, as well as I said, oh, this is, you know, it's, I don't know, it's got a Hemi. I don't know what the hell all these terms are, but at least it felt like you were buying a machine, right? This machine that was going to transport you. If you've gone to a dealer now for a new car, or even if you've watched the commercials, if you'll notice, they don't even talk about the guts of the car anymore. It's all about the bells and whistles in the car. It's got this stereo. It's got, you could bring up your Facebook page. It's voice activated. You can type in your emails. It'll bring up your emails on the screen. It's all about the technology of the cool bells and whistles that, you know, the cool stuff. And obviously, at this point, navigation system isn't even anything big, even though it was for me. I never had one before. But it's all about the cool technology. Oh, look at this. You could plug in your phone here. You could bring up Pandora. You can bring up your Spotify list. It's all this stuff. And I don't even know anything about cars. And I'm like asking the guy, well, does it have pistons? How does it run? And he looked at me like I was crazy. Well, what do you care about that? Don't you care about this cool screen? Look at when you back up, you can see, you know. So that's clearly where car dealers and even car makers are now, you know, they're into the whole, technology revolution, because that's clearly where the majority of society is. They want to know about the cool stuff it could do. They take for granted that the car can run. I hit the button or I turn the key. Okay, the car's going to run. A lot of people today don't know much about the inner workings of a car. You take it to a guy. That's what I did, you know. My dad wasn't a car guy, and so he passed on his lack of knowledge on cars to me, and I have none either. All I know is I don't even turn the key anymore. Now you press the button. If the button doesn't press, I call the guy if the car doesn't start. But here's my point. So now, with all the bells and whistles, okay, we decide to buy the car. So the salesman's all excited, and he says, well, give me your phone because you've got Bluetooth on here, and I'm going to put your phone so you could do hands-free. And I'm like, okay, I don't know if I really need that. I don't really talk on the phone that much, but if I can do it, I might as well do it. My wife's got it on her phone. I don't necessarily think that the hands-free sounds good. Maybe she's not talking I don't know, where's the microphone? Is it in the steering wheel? Is it in the rearview mirror? I don't know. Is it in the when she talks to me in the it sounds like she's outside of the car on the highway, running next to the car. But regardless. So he says, "Give me your phone because I'm going to Bluetooth. I'll put your Bluetooth." Once again, I don't know, Bluetooth from red tooth, white teeth. I thought white teeth were supposed to be good, but apparently blue teeth are better. So he says, "Give me your phone and I'll hook it up." So he's sitting in the passenger seat. I'm sitting in the front seat because he's showing me all the technology that this car has, you know. Like I'm at the Apple Labs or something. I thought Tim Cook was going to come out with a sweater on and show me how great all this stuff is in the car. So he says, "Well, give me your phone and I'll hook it up." Great. Well, I pull out my little flip phone, and so he looks at this thing, and he goes, "Oh, okay. Well, I don't know about this." So he hits the buttons, and apparently, you know, you have to go on. He says, "Does this even have Bluetooth?" And I said, no, it does. It's look right here. It's got Bluetooth and bowling and Tetris. I told you, there's a lot of stuff in this cell phone. So it says it has Bluetooth. And he says, "Okay, well, hit that. And now, okay. So now when I hit this button on your dashboard, you know, the car's technology is going to find your phone and hook you in, and you're hands-free." So I'm coming right into the 90s now with this technology. Well, my car can't find my phone. So I don't know how much I don't know how blue. I don't know how blue. I must have a pale Bluetooth because my Bluetooth is not very strong. So my phone does not hook up. Now, maybe we're hitting wrong buttons. I should read the manual. But I just thought it was funny that, once again, my lack of my I've got my toe into the technology world, not the whole foot and certainly not a leg, and I'm not even close to waist deep. But I thought it was funny how all of a sudden here I was. With this new car, 2016, it's got all the cool, the newest bells and whistles. Give me your friend. This guy was so excited because, you know, salesmen these days don't even really do that much. I don't, you know, I mean, I'm not putting anything down, but I believe these cars are all loaded. They've got all these cool things. And, you know, I think for the most part, people these days are doing so much of their own research on cars that I think most people come in pretty much with a good idea of which car they want to buy or what type. They've done their research. They've got their facts. And so I think it's more or less of going to the dealership and saying, "I like to see this car." And there's always haggling. I'm not saying that doesn't happen. And certainly you might see another car. But I think for the most part, you know, the internet has allowed people to do a lot more and come to the dealership a lot more informed on what they want and what the car they want or the types of features they want. So I think that the salesmen are all excited about all this technology. At least they want to get you excited. And I pulled out my little flip phone, and he looked at me like I was from another planet, or certainly from another age. And when it didn't hook up, despite my protests of how I do have Bluetooth, there was a point there where I said to myself, "This is kind of embarrassing." I don't embarrass easy, folks. Believe me, I've done a lot of goofy things. But I was a little embarrassed when my cell phone would not even hook up into the into the car. And we're back here at Captain Podtastic. Elton Jim Toronto with you. And as we do most times here on the podcast, we love to talk a little pop culture. And for me, there's no one else I enjoy talking pop culture with than my pal Mick Kaler. Are you there, Mick?
Yes, I am, Jim. How you doing?
Not too bad. Did you hear my latest misadventure with my phone?
Yes, I did. And a couple of things. First of all, I'm with you on the phone thing because my cell phone has a rotary dial to it.
Now, that would be cool.
Yeah.
Now, tell me that a really hip kind of, even if there was a rotary that was virtual.
Right.
Like you pulled it up as an app.
Yeah, and you just put your finger on it on a screen.
Yeah, you know, everybody's scrolling with all this Tumblr and Tiddler and Biddler and Schmidler and all that other stuff. So wouldn't that be cool to just go four, and it would make that rotary sound, too?
Exactly, and you'd be retro chic there.
Yeah.
So.
And it was always fun to hit the zero.
Yeah. So there's that. And then the other thing, just so everyone knows, the people that are checking out the podcast, Jim is a little bit behind in the times because the last time he and I shot baskets, I tossed him the basketball. Jim looked at it and said, "Where are the laces?
Where are the laces?" And I shot underhand.
Yeah, exactly.
Between my legs.
Where's the peach basket?
Hey, when Dr. Naismith taught me how to play basketball, that's how we shot. There's none of this above the head stuff.
Right, you had a set shot going.
Hey, I loved Bob Cousy. Google that name, folks.
There you go.
But So I'm sure you didn't hear the beginning because you weren't on. But this whole segment of my phone started because I was talking on my phone,
mm-hmm.
and I just got a new car, and I wasn't really used to the new car, and I was so distracted by my phone call, I got into the wrong car, and I was in there for 5 minutes.
Why isn't this working? Why doesn't this look familiar?
Well, that's what it was. Yeah, I mean, and then not only that, but the car smelled like smoke. And so finally.
Gamey smoke? I didn't know about
that. That's what
this.
I mean. And the funny thing is, when I sat in the car, my knees were hitting the steering wheel. And I'm like, well, maybe I didn't. Maybe this car goes back. You know, this car has a different. Every time you get in, you have to reset it.
Yeah.
You know, which makes no sense at all. But I was so distracted by my phone call. I was in this car for 5 minutes.
Oh, that's funny.
Because I was parked right next to it because this guy obviously kept his door open because I hit my key fob.
Oh, God.
And I wasn't, it was dark. It was a black car, and I wasn't used to the shape yet, because it's a different kind of car than I had before.
Yeah.
And I sat in there for five. But what if the guy would have walked out?
Yeah, he started to steal my car. What are you doing?
Yeah. So I was talking about cell phones and getting distracted, and then I was saying how... as I said before, then my cell phone wouldn't hook up. But that's beside the point. What I wanted to talk about today on Pop Culture Club. Oh. Do you understand the tie-in there, Mick?
I guess so. We're here in a Pop Culture Club.
It's
and
pop.
We're talking about pop culture, and we're a little club.
Right. I don't know if we do we need to keep saying that?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I know. That is getting a little old. I might just, from now on, I'm just going to, Mike, the producer, is going to just play the Karma Chameleon. I'm going to say Pop Culture Club. If you get it, you get it. If it goes over your head, you won't miss it. And those who get it will be giving me the A-OK sign and going, that's why I listen to this podcast.
Well, let's put it this way. When I watch Jeopardy every day, Alex Trebek does not have to remind the contestants to answer the quiz in a question form, okay?
Yeah, but every so often he'll go, ooh, we have to, ooh, you didn't say that. He will do that sometime.
Well, my favorite thing with Trebek is when he gets to talk French because he's from Canada.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's Trebek.
Yeah. Oh, it's the lamb. And I'm just like, God, you are just wetting your pants over this, aren't you, pal?
Well, he does with French what the Hispanic TV news reporters do with Spanish.
Yeah.
They'll say like, oh, hi, my name is Tony Rodriguez, and we're here in Chicago on Michigan Avenue. And as we can see, the Chipotle. And I am Tom Rodriguez.
Yeah.
And then when you see him in a bar, he's Tom Rodriguez.
Right, exactly.
But when you see him on the thing, he goes, I'm Tom Rodriguez. It's like, slow down. We get it. Anyway, so on Pop Culture Club today, we here in Chicago will have just experienced, I personally won't, I don't know if you're going.
No.
But the reunion of Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, first time since 1993. They're going out on tour. the whole band. I mean,
yeah,
Slash,
is Slash, and I mean, it seems like in rock and roll, hell freezes over quite a bit.
Yeah, when the paycheck gets big enough.
Yeah, suddenly the temperature in hell,
right,
gets a lot chillier.
Yep.
Because the old phrase that that the Eagles used for more than 10 years between Henley and Fry and the rest of them, where the Eagles will get together when hell freezes over.
Yeah, and the thing is, it's a money issue.
Of course.
But also, we've talked about this before off the air, like when the Eagles went on tour, they didn't even have to see each other. Henley and Fry rode on separate private
right.
jets. They had separate dressing rooms. All they had to do was show up to a sound check. Okay, I see you on the stage. And then when it was time for the show, okay, here's the set list. Let's go up. Let's play. And then they go their separate ways. So if Axl and Slash or any of the guys in the Guns N' Roses band are having troubles, guess what? You got your own little private room. Go sit in there.
You don't even have to see the guy on stage.
Yeah.
And my proof of that is about 10 or 12 years ago, I saw Simon and Garfunkel.
Right.
And they are notoriously at odds with one another.
Exactly.
They have been friends since they were little kids. They had this amazing run in the 60s. They broke up. They if you remember, with the in 75, My Little Town was a Paul Simon song, but Art Garfunkel, I mean, it was kind of a, it was a Paul Simon album, but Art sang on it. Pretty much as a Simon and Garfunkel song.
Yeah, he added the flavor to it.
Yeah,
right?
And then later they did a version of Sam Cooke's Wonderful World with Art Garfunkel as the name on it, but Paul Simon and James Taylor were part of it. Anyway, they've always been back and forth. Well, then obviously in the 90s, you know, there was a huge, you know, they did that Central Park tour live album, or one show that has been on Channel 11 quite a bit. It was a live album.
Yeah.
So they've always come back and forth, and this was a huge tour. It was a great show because they had the Everly Brothers on,
okay,
with them, who were a great, you know, influence on them when they were
sure,
starting out.
Yeah.
So it was great to see the Everlys, and it was a cool idea because they actually, the Everlys came out in the middle of the show,
okay,
instead of opening, you know, like they would usually do.
Right.
But anyway, so I had pretty good seats, and I'm watching Simon and Garfunkel. They put on a 2.5 hour show. They played every
hit.
Simon and Garfunkel song, hit as well as even deep cut you'd want.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a satisfying show. And I'm watching these two, and I have to tell you, Paul Simon did not look at Art Garfunkel until the final song.
Yeah, they don't have to. They can put
and it was a quick
and
it was a quick glance.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think it was a smile.
Sure.
And Art, and the reason I noticed this was because it was clear as the concert was going on that Art was looking for some connection.
Right.
Like from Paul. Like,
and
hey,
Paul's just gonna sing and they're just gonna sing together.
Yeah, didn't we just do you know, the boxer really well there?
Yeah, about that?
Yeah, wasn't that great to hear, you know, I Am a Rock? We did that pretty good for our age, and what, you know what I mean? And Paul Simon, so to your point, not only do they not have to travel, do they not have to sleep in the same, they don't even have to see each other on stage.
Exactly. Well, and getting back to that point about the backstage stuff and all that, the Rolling Stones, Keith Richards has the set list delivered by someone else to Jagger's hotel room. Jagger looks at it, and then he'll make a couple of marks, like, oh, let's do this instead or that, then sends it back to Richards, and then there they
yeah.
go.
Well, I'll tell you, so, I mean, clearly, you know, there has always been, whatever the rift was, it was never made public about why Guns N' Roses, you know, crashed and burned. Obviously, they were huge. When a band gets that big and that popular, and becomes just synonymous. They're ubiquitous. They're everywhere. Usually egos play a role, and when you've got two people, especially with someone like Axl Rose, who seems that he's got his own demons to deal with.
Yeah, he's got a lot of emotional
issues. So,
and then you throw in the money, you throw in the drugs.
Yeah, there's a lot of. So anyway, they break up. in the early 90s, and, you know, this is clearly, you know, there was a lot of acrimony there. And then, of course, he went out, kept the, you know, he had rights to the name, apparently. So he went out and formed another version of Guns N' Roses. It took him, 10 years to make that Chinese Democracy album?
Yeah, one of the biggest flops.
Yeah.
One of the biggest, like, everyone's anticipating it. I'm like, guys, this is going to be a terrible record.
Yeah.
Just get ready for it.
It was like that. It was like that album that they always talked about with Prince. He wrote the, he had this album, and he was going to put it out. At the last minute, he pulled it.
Yeah.
And it was the Black Album, they called it.
Yeah, I remember that.
And oh my gosh, if we could only hear the Black Album. And then they finally put it out, and no one cared.
Exactly.
It's horrible. That's why he pulled it. Yeah, I got a reason why he pulled it. I got news for you. It wasn't that good.
Right.
So anyway, so they, for whatever reason, it was very funny about this, as people like you and me that, you know, follow this. It was so weird. All of a sudden, it was within a week, it went from Guns N' Roses may get together to here are the tour dates.
Yeah.
This thing either was percolating for a while, way under the radar, or somebody came up, as you said, with some money that they could not turn down.
And it's crazy money, and I'm not putting them down for it. I say
no.
Hey, power,
hey, look, they, hey, they have every, hey, they're not, they're playing their hits, they're playing their legacy. So if someone's going to, you know, if there's a demand, I say you go for it. I mean,
sure.
In show business, there are no guarantees. And so when you've got the ability, and here, you know, they're both in their 50s, and they're both saying, look, you know, we're getting older here, and if we can make a boatload of money that is, this is, you know, is going to be generational wealth,
mm-hmm.
which the Rose family won't, it will be like the Kennedys, the Slashes.
Great-grandchildren will never work.
Yeah, the Slashes will be set for, you know, there will be five generations of Slashes that will be set. And if that money is there, then I don't begrudge them. I think it's funny how Axl Rose was doing nothing for a while. Now he's the lead singer of AC/DC and Guns N' Roses.
He's like, wait a minute, I missed this.
Yeah.
You know, I missed the money.
So that's fine. But, you know, like I said, and now I don't know about you. I was never a huge Guns N' Roses fan.
I wasn't too big into them either. The Appetite for Destruction album was obviously the biggie. And I saw how a lot of metal fans and hard rock fans could appreciate that. And I can appreciate some of the music, but I don't think I'd ever would have gone to see him unless maybe somebody had a free ticket, like, hey, you got an extra ticket, you want to come?
Yeah.
I'd be like, all right, but it wasn't something I clamored for.
I mean, I got Appetite for Destruction more out of obligation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, okay, if you're going to have a record collection, how do you not have Appetite for Destruction?
It, I mean, should be in there.
Yeah, right? I mean, between, you know, Sweet Child of Mine and all the rest of it. So how do you not?
Right.
But
yeah, the funny thing is with Guns N' Roses, my favorite song was on the EP, that song, that ballad, Patience.
Right.
I love that song.
Or I mean, and even November Rain.
Yeah.
The slower ones were actually, but, well, although I do like Paradise City. That had a nice riff to it, a nice hook. But anyway, so I thought it was interesting. All of a sudden, boom, they got together within minutes. You know, there was a tour. These guys weren't talking for 20 years. And then within minutes, there was a whole tour set up.
Got the whole thing ready to go.
So it got me thinking, and I thought that this is something that we could chat about. So now, ironically, if you would have done this idea of which bands would you like to see reunite,
mm-hmm.
if you had done this 10 or 15 years ago, the list would be bigger. But the funny thing is, to your point earlier, when the money is there, you know, when you're younger, you're very idealistic.
You're doing your own thing.
It's important for, if you have some kind of argument or grudge, it's important for you to have been right. You know, you're taking your stand, and you believe in what you believe in. And we all have gone through that. I'm not putting that down, and everybody will go through that. But
exactly.
I think what you do learn as you get older is that you don't always need to be right. And, you know, life is what it is. And some of these principled stands that you may have taken you start to, well, whatever. And I think
you once, grow out of them.
Yeah, and once again, if you can stand on principle when someone's offering you $100 million, then I give. Then wow, I will bow to you.
Sure.
I just think that there is so much money being thrown. Did you hear recently that you know there's that big festival that's going to be happening in California with the Stones and McCartney
and the Who
and Neil Young.
Tour, yeah.
And apparently, from now, whether this is true or not, I don't know, but there was a story floating around that Zeppelin was approached to be a part of that.
And they turned it down?
$14 million for two weekends.
For one show?
I think for two shows.
Two shows. Oh, excuse me. Well, two shows. Jim, yeah. Jim, if they're going to throw $14 million at me and it's two shows, I mean, I got to get up there twice. I got to go up there Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it.
And once again, Robert Plant. Now, here's the thing about that. Believe me, you know, that's a lot of money for a two-hour work. But I do give Robert Plant some credit. Understandably, Jimmy Page is out of his mind.
Yeah.
Because, you know, but once again, you know, if you're a guitar player and you still have, you don't have, you know, you're 65 and you don't have arthritis or anything and you can still play the guitar.
What do you care?
Yeah, your sound is going to be the same.
Yeah, Jimmy still sounds the same.
Yeah, if he plays that
Stairway to Heaven and all
yeah,
the
he plays
songs.
That opening the Stairway to Heaven or Whole Lot of Love, it's going to sound just the same. But Robert, you know, the voice box is a human muscle. That does not always hold up as well as a guitar string. And so I do give Robert Plant some credit because clearly he's never said it, but obviously, think about those Led Zeppelin songs.
He can't do them anymore.
Well, every one of the songs he has to sing, if you're going to see him and pay $300 a seat, is one of those screaming rock songs. And as you said, he can't do it. And it's nothing against him.
Yeah, those were difficult to sing when he was younger.
Exactly.
He back on it.
So he's looking at he's looking at the legacy, and he's going, look, I don't, you know, in about 10 years or so ago, they did do this one show in London, or a couple of shows, two or three shows. But you know what? He had time to rest. He had time to, you know, get his voice okay. He did those shows. They sounded great. And he's like, okay. We got together. We made up for our terrible performance at Live Aid.
Which was, I think, one of the things that really scared him.
Yeah.
Like, that was a mess.
Yeah, that was a mess when they got together for that. So they came back. He did it well. He sounded good. But clearly, and you know they would be offered $500 million probably.
For a tour,
A real tour. But at the same time, to make that money back, you would have to do two or three. Look at all the problems Daltrey's been having. Because he was a screamer. And, you know, you need to have two or three or four or a week in between. Well, if you're going to have a week in between shows.
The tour's going to go on forever.
Yeah. So I give him credit. I mean, it's a shame. But that is part of the human experience is that people get older. And, you know, I don't know if it was great to see Frank Sinatra with Alzheimer's.
Yeah. Well, the two things on the what you're talking about, first of all, asking Robert Plant to sing those songs now would be like going up to Nolan Ryan right now and saying, throw me a 100-mile-an-hour fastball.
Yeah, so here's the thing. So you're all excited about going to see Zeppelin, and then you get there, and there they are, and okay, that's great visually. And then what's going to be your takeaway? Well, they weren't that great.
Yeah, Plant's voice is lost.
So he's saying, no, look, we've got the legacy. We did this one thing. It sounded good. The albums are there. I don't want that caveat of, well, it was great to be there, but they didn't sound good, or his voice cracked.
It's always better to leave the party early.
Exactly. So I do give him credit, but my gosh, that's a lot of scratch to turn down.
No joke. Well,
that's a lot of Tubmans.
About Daltrey.
That's a lot of Tubmans to turn down.
That's right. One thing I wanted to mention about Daltrey is, you know, Eddie Vedder from time to time has guested staying with The Who, and he has said he cannot believe that Roger has sung so many years
right.
in the keys and the pitches and the songs he's had to do that Townsend's written, because Eddie Vedder, even in his younger years, like, I can't keep doing this, and this guy's been doing it for like 30 years.
They did a orchestral version with an orchestra and opera singers doing Quadrophenia.
Mm-hmm.
There's an album version of it, because Townsend really likes to, he loves that Quadrophenia, so he tries to do it in all different types of forms. And there was a version of this live concert they did from the Albert Hall on Channel 11. Every so often you can see
I've seen it.
And so they've got a well-known, I don't know what his name is, but apparently he's a very well-known, with a strong voice, opera singer, singing the Daltrey parts. And not only is someone like Eddie Vedder, who's still a rock star, okay, still has a rock star voice, but here's a trained singer who is singing opera, which is not easy. And he said he can't believe how Daltrey sang those songs.
Right. So, again, appreciate the younger years when they could do it. And then, like you said, respect the fact that Robert Plant for Zeppelin says, you know what?
Yeah.
Can't do this anymore.
So here's the thing. So, Guns N' Roses is together now. And the funny thing about that, and like I said, through the years, we've seen the Eagles get together. We saw the Police get together. All these bands that were, it would be great if they got together. And, of course, the money was so ridiculous that as much as they hated each other, they had to do it. And I know that Sting had a horrible time on the tour when they got back together a few years ago. But I also read about 6 months after the tour ended, he bought a $27 million apartment in New York.
And probably did it in cash.
Yeah. So, once again, you know what? If I have to hate you for 2 hours, I think, let me think about let's play the long game.
I can get over it.
Yeah. So I was just thinking to throw around some names. I don't know if you've got any lists. I threw together some names. So at this point, as we stand, because so many bands have gotten together where they have at least, the prime movers, the lead singer or the lead guitarist. I think in a rock and roll reunion, it's good to have the bass player. Don't get me wrong. It's good to have the drummer, but you got to have Mick and Keith. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You got to have the lead singer. You got to have, Steven Tyler and Joe Perry. Daltrey and Townsend.
Well, exactly. That would be, because John Entwistle and Keith Moon died, and while some people say the Who is now the Two,
right,
they can still be out there because you got the lead singer and the lead guitar.
So given that kind of preface or that premise there, here's a couple of bands that I think would be cool to get back together that I might pay some good money to see.
All right.
The number one on my list is Dire Straits.
I'd love to see that, too.
I don't know what is up Mark Knopfler's butt, but there is an amazing catalog of music that they made as Dire Straits. It was very unique. Some of these songs were 15 minutes long. Telegraph Road, great song from the Love
Long
of
Long Jams, yeah.
Yeah, Long Jams is amazing guitar playing. They were all, the whole band was made up of excellent musicians, and they put out 5 or 6 excellent albums, and so many, especially the one album from 1980 called Making Movies, which is really, I know that the Money for Nothing album, Brothers in Arms, is the one that was the major, 1985 hit, but for me, if you want Dire Straits, you listen to the 1980 album called Making Movies. And that music aside, he does these tours on his own, and he may play 1 or 2 songs, but there is so much great music that sadly a whole generation doesn't even know about.
And it's just collecting dust.
Yeah. So for me, my number one at this point would be Dire Straits. What would be a band that you'd like to hear?
Well,
see?
And I know it's never going to happen because he's told, Anthony Mason on CBS that he'd never do it. I'd like to see REM, but let me give you my caveat on that, okay?
And I've got them on my list, too. I can't believe you said that.
Okay, Michael Stipe said to Anthony Mason he'll never sing with them again. It doesn't sound like there's a rift. He just wants to do something else. He's into that whole, we have to move forward kind
of
thing.
Right.
I want to see REM. But Bill Berry has to be behind the drums.
Right, exactly.
Okay? And the other thing is, they have to play songs from the first several records.
Right.
They got to play from Murmur, Reckoning, Fables of the Reconstruction, Life's Rich Pageant, and Document. And because it rocks out so hard, I'd like to hear what's the frequency, Kenneth, because Bill Berry was still with them then. But they have to play those songs, and they don't want to do that. They want to, if they would make a record, a new record, you're going to hear like 90% of the new record as opposed to the old songs.
What's so funny is I made a list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, of about 12, and I said, let me just nail my top, out of those 12 that I listed, let me name my top five, right?
Okay.
And REM, in parentheses, original lineup.
Yeah, original lineup. And again, you got to, and of course, you know, Skype was always for years, even when they were touring, even with Barry, it's like, we're not a greatest hits band.
Yeah.
Guess what? I want you to be a greatest hits band. Yeah. Go play the hits.
So that's so funny that not only did we both mention REM, but we also mentioned the caveat of being, it has to be the original lineup, because when Bill Berry left that band, as I just said, oh, you know, you need your guitarist and your lead singer. That's one. That is one example, and one of the few, where when the drummer left, the band completely changed, and not for the better.
And the other part about REM hanging on like that, Jim, is years ago when Berry was with the band, they always said, if one of us leaves, we're all done.
Yeah, right.
And then as soon as Barry left, it's like,
okay,
well, there's a lot of money out there.
Yeah, once
there's
again. So now here's another band that I don't think, for whatever reason, I'm not sure what the acrimony is between them. It seems like it always happens. But I saw them only one time, and it was one of the best concerts I've ever seen. And I've seen a lot of concerts. But I would love to see Talking Heads get back together.
That would be a fun one, too.
Yeah.
I never saw them live.
Yeah, the only time.
Not Making Sense movie.
Yeah, and well, I saw that tour. I saw the tour that became the Stop Making Sense film where David Byrne wore the big white suit, and he came out with the boombox playing, Psycho Killer. And as the show continued, he came out just solo with the boombox and playing Psycho Killer on the guitar. And then as the show progressed, one piece of instrument came, and to the point where within an hour in, the whole stage was full. It was just a great, it was conceptually, it was great. Musically, it was great. Visually, it was great. It really was. If you see the film, Stop Making Sense, as good as Jonathan Demme did in filming that, which is always considered one of the best rock films, to be there was unbelievable. And I would love to see them get together. But once again, when I read about David Byrne, whatever it is, it sounds like there's no chance.
Well, the thing with him is he's kind of like Stipe. There's this artistry thing. Well, I'm doing this, and I'm doing this experimental thing.
Yeah, but no one cares. No one cares.
And it's like, you can't get together with some old friends and play some great songs?
Nobody cares about David Byrne's flamenco album.
Get out of here. Really? I thought I saw a line outside Rolling Stones
Records
waiting for that.
Anyone else?
You know, this would be a dream because the guys are like older than dirt, but Rockpile.
Oh, wow. Nice choice.
Nick Lowe, Dave Edmonds.
Wow.
Terry Williams.
Teacher, teach me love.
These guys had one record out, and there's not one bad song on it.
Oh, I know. Wow. In fact, like you said, Nick Lowe, Dave Edmonds. Now, the funny thing is that Nick Lowe, one of the great rock songwriters, he wrote What's So Funny About Peace, Love, and Understanding that Elvis Costello made a hit. But he's also written some of the great, I mean, his big hits obviously were Cruel to Be Kind and Switchboard Susan, that Cruel to Be Kind album, you know, that was great. But he's kind of forgotten, sadly. And
yeah,
he really is one of the great. And then Dave Edmonds, of course, had some big hits, but never huge. Although I Hear You Knocking was a big song for him, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was. And he had a couple other ones, but again.
And then the 80s. Remember, what was that? Remember the 80s? Remember he had a few hits, right? What was that?
Yeah, one was called Something About You.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A couple other ones that were out like that.
Wow, Rockpile. Nice call. Nice call. What I would like to see, it needs to be, once again, you need the majority of the main guys, especially the two vocalists, but I'd like to see Supertramp.
That'd be fun.
I just think I would love to see them do Breakfast in America, as well as You're Bloody Well Right, but there needs to be both singers. It can't just be Roger Hodgson. It has to be both singers. I'd like to see that because I would like to see, I'm not a huge Genesis fan, But I would like to see Genesis with Peter Gabriel.
I never did. I saw Genesis a couple times with Phil Collins being the guy. And this is after, obviously after Peter Gabriel left, but that would be a lot of fun too.
And my last one, unfortunately, which I don't think will ever happen again, I've seen them both individually solo, but I've never seen them together, is once again Pink Floyd.
Roger Waters.
Roger Waters and David Gilmour just can't stand one another. Can't stand you.
Yeah, they just...
I don't know what it is, but my gosh, if there's all that money for Guns N' Roses or someone else, I would say it's, if there was the Holy Grail from a promoter standpoint right now, the biggest check that they would be willing to write would be either for Led Zeppelin or Pink Floyd.
Yeah, well, the Led Zeppelin one is, like you said, totally off the table because of plant ability. And again, no slam at him. But the Pink Floyd one could be done. And the other part of that is, you know, you, like you said, there's this acrimony and all that. But it's like, you know, when you go to like reunions, whether it's like a place that you work at or a high school reunion, it's a once in a blue moon kind of a situation. Oh, remember these guys? Remember we did all this? What's wrong with doing that for a few months on the
That's
road?
What I'm saying.
Oh, remember we played this song. Let's do it live again. What's wrong with that?
And as we said at the beginning of this conversation, in today's world, with the money that they have and the money that they would be making on this, they wouldn't have to see each other.
Yeah.
Even on stage, especially Pink Floyd with all the musicians.
Yeah, he puts the lasers up in the fog.
Yeah, you
the,
don't. You yeah, with, yeah. Believe me, with enough fog and enough lights, you wouldn't even have to know each other's there.
Yeah, just listen to each other.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's just such a stumbling block for those guys. But I really think the money would just be insane.
Oh, my God.
And, of course, they'd have to play, you know, Soldier Field-type stadium.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, I've seen Roger Waters do The Wall, and it was really amazing. But it wasn't David Gilmour doing Comfortably Numb.
Yeah.
It wasn't. It was there, but it wasn't. Well, anyway, Mick, I had a great time chatting here, as we always do. And we always go off the subject anyway, which is always fun.
Left turns are our middle name.
Yeah. Well, anyway, thanks for once again being a charter member of the Pop Culture Club. And there was a movie reviewer in the 80s with the big mustache, with glasses. I can't remember his name.
Oh, Bill Harris.
Bill Harris. I didn't like him, but I liked his catchphrase. We'll talk again.
You got it.
All right. That's Mick Kaler, another version of Pop Culture Club. And this has been another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of the web to your screen.